Ladies and gentlemen, it's all about voice.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. Hello from Cologne. It's raining today, but we are in summer, and it's already summer. It's already July, already the third quarter of 2021. So more than the half already gone from 2021. We are super happy to be back with our next event. Welcome, everyone. We're super excited about our next Meet the Expert interview with, a friend, a business partner, a colleague, voice enthusiast, Jan König from Jovo, who will introduce himself in a few moments. So it's hashtag meet the König today. And how is it at your end, Dominic? Is it raining too, like in Cologne, in Munich? How's the weather?
Maybe you can hear the thunderstorm in the background. It is about to start to rain, I'd say, in 3 minutes, I'd say. So there could be some noise in the background.
I just got the warning from an Alexa skill, from a weather skill, that there will be thunderstorms in Munich around the afternoon here. So be aware, and let's see if your internet connection is stable enough and you don't have like electricity problems and things like that. But yeah, we will cover that in case you will get lost. There's Jan, there's me. Everything's fine. So hi to all of you who are joining us from the Hopin backend or Hopin website on your browsers, and all of you from who are tuning in from our dedicated AAV Alexa skill. It's called AAV Club and activated with activate and open AAV Club or aktiviere AAV Club. You can also join while being on the go, having a walk outside in case it's not raining in your town right now. Hello to all of you who are tuning in from our Alexa skill. Dominic.
Yeah.
Anything to add?
So of course people talking about voice technology should join events via their smart speakers. So this is something that everybody's talking about voice first. Try this out. Use your smart speaker to tune in here. Don't use your browser, and see what voice technology can do for you if you are watching or listening to an event here while we are talking. So this event today is, as always, one in a series. It's the second Meet the Expert that we did. The first one was with the famous Brett Kinsella a while ago. We are doing other events here where we're talking about one dedicated topic, like voice in cars, or that we might do some voice technology in the future, or voice and UX or voice design. So something is coming up here that we will talk about later maybe. And all these events are under the umbrella of AAV Club series. And this whole event series is co-presented and sponsored by the Media Netzwerk Bayern. They are a state-funded private partnership, a public-private partnership, and they try to foster the voice as the media and technology ecosystem within and in Bavaria. And one of their main topics is voice as well, because voice and media are connected quite strong. And so they have been supporting us from our first event back in 2018 and are still our dearest supporters. We are grateful to have them. And thanks to them, you can enjoy now a whole hour, 1.5 hour of interview with Tim König from Jovo. So the good thing about this event, and this is a live event, is that it's sometimes not easy for us not to mess up the lines from each other, as you can see. And the other good thing for the audience is that you can join us here, watch the interview, and if anything arises or comes to your mind that you want to know from any of us three, please use the chat, ask your questions, place your questions there. And we will either try to answer them on the go while we are interviewing or talking about with Jan, or there will be a dedicated Q&A session in the end where we will catch up with all the questions that arose that we couldn't address while we were talking with Jan. Anything else, Tim?
No. I think that's it. And after our interview, we will have some sort of like after hour, not on Clubhouse, actually here on Hopin in our breakout session room called the Voice Bar. And we will have a casual hangout together with you. And we are super happy to see you there. Maybe sharing your camera feed and your audio feed and having a small chat with us and Jan. So we will take care of all your questions, like Dominic said, and try to answer them while speaking. And I'd say now it's time to bring him on stage, right? The not less famous than Brett Kinsella, not less famous person from the Voice ecosystem. Jan, how are you doing today? Good to see you.
Hey there. Hey there. Great to be here. Thanks a lot. Really looking forward to chatting with all of you and the audience.
Okay, so Cologne, rain. Munich, rain. Berlin.
Yeah, gray.
Oh, yeah. Okay, there's developer speaking, like the shades are closed and everything's dark in this room. No. How is it in your end? How's the weather?
Yeah, it's raining a little bit. It's gray. But it's getting better, hopefully.
So even better now, it's no reason to go outside and enjoy the sun. There is no sun. Stay here, stay with us in this conversation today. Yes. Jan, for those few people who might not know you, please give us a short introduction of your person, please. Who's Jan König?
Yes, so I'm Jan. I'm one of the founders of Jovo, which is a voice technology startup, which has been around for, I think, 4.5 years now. So we started in, around March 2017. And we've been working on Jovo since then. So Jovo was the first open source framework that developers could use to build voice apps that work across Alexa and Google Assistant. And and since then we expanded a lot. It has always been great to be part of this community. And we still believe in this space and are still working on progressing the market, building tools for not only developers anymore, but cross-functional teams to work in the voice space. Yes. And besides Jovo, I also host a voice lunch session called Voice Lunch Strategy every other Thursday, where we talk about strategic aspects of the voice industry. And I also blog under a website called contextfirst.com about multimodal user experiences.
Yeah, I've read a few of them, and I remember that you just wrote like your longest article with like more than 3K words or so,
Definitely took me the longest to write it. Yeah, it was quite quite a journey, but yeah, I learned a lot in the process.
I see like a 20-minute read, so so you have to have enough time to get through that like small book you wrote on dialogue management, which we will be discussing maybe also later. When did we meet for the first time, Jan? I think it's been a meetup, right, in Berlin, or
maybe a meetup in or Berlin.
The voice meetup.
I think it was in late 2017. We also met at a conference in Cologne. I think in September.
The Demexco marketing conference.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe where you were on a panel, right? On voice commerce or on e-commerce or so. I think.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah. And then we went to Voice Summit together and spent time in
an apartment.
There.
Yeah.
Yes. So in 2018. Fun. That was when I probably gave the most embarrassing presentation in my life about 10 secrets of advanced voice applications. But yeah, that was a fun time.
When did you start? Stop? Like after seven or what did you?
Five and a half.
Five and a half. And then we're like, okay, that's enough. Like,
so we're still waiting for the other four and a half. Maybe this session we will learn about them. Don't hold them back.
Maybe.
Yeah. We're eager to hear them.
Wait until the end. And yeah. And you will hear four and a half secrets.
Maybe there are like a few. Yeah. The times back then when traveling and business trips were a thing, you know, I remember these times. And my last business trip was, I think, in January last year to Project Voice in Chattanooga. So since then, like, no more traveling, but it's okay. And we're doing these kinds of virtual events, which are a lot of fun and allows us to bring people together from many, many different places. Okay, great. So let's talk voice tech, right?
Mm-hmm. So, I think, As we know, I think, or as you heard, we have a strong connection over the past years, and have been, I think, in talking about voice technology, wondering about voice technology, innovating around voice technology. So this, I think, something that connects us three together here, and especially I think Jovo is one of the pioneers in voice technology over the last years, and so. We'd like to know what is your perspective about the voice ecosystem. How has the voice ecosystem evolved over the last years? And what are the changes or the challenges that we are facing today in the voice ecosystem? Is there anything that, like from a Jovo perspective, that as a resource in voice technology, you would see as the main pinpoints here?
So I wouldn't call Jovo a pioneer in the voice industry, or maybe in the modern voice industry, starting with Alexa, because before that there was already lots of stuff happening, and we're standing on the shoulders of a lot of great work and research that has been done the last 30 years or so, and so there's still a lot to learn from them, and so. It felt like with the start of Alexa that there was a new wave of voice enthusiasts entering the market. And it felt like, oh, that's an inflection point. And at the beginning, there was a lot. It was very developer driven. So there was really, Alexa had an API that you could interact with. And most of the marketing material was targeted at developers, and it was pretty similar to maybe websites in the 90s where there were only developers could build websites and there were no design standards or anything. And this also, like, the results in the 90s of the websites was pretty like not really great websites. And not really usable, not really pretty websites, pretty unusable, but not pretty. And and similar with voice experiences as well. So they worked, at least in the way they were intended to work, but they were still it still really felt very early. And on the other side, Amazon and Google, they marketed their assistants as being super smart and like artificial intelligence and so on. And so there, the last few years really felt like a fight between trying to help consumers understand how they can use these devices, fighting against expectations where they think, okay, why doesn't Alexa learn by itself and so on, and developers getting frustrated because it's difficult to build for these platforms and so on. But there was a lot of stuff that changed since then, lots of improvements there. And we see that there are a lot of people that now focus on building voice experiences, and actually a lot of people coming to the mix, cross-functional teams like voice user interface designers, conversation designers, that's usually the term people use nowadays, and product managers, really moving from just a developer building something, maybe an independent developer or a team of developers, moving to a cross-functional team or like a voice / conversational AI product team that has content managers, product managers, and so on. And I think that's one of the most important things that is going to help us improve voice experiences by letting them design and build, being built by diverse cross-functional teams. And we need the tools for that as well. So there's still not a lot of tools in this market, because there in the last few years the monetization perspective of voice still hasn't been improving a lot. And this is why there's like, when there's no one to pay for tools, it's difficult to build tools, but we need the tools right now to progress and to build standards, best practices, and so on, to make it easier to build great experiences. So it's a little bit of a difficult situation, but there's a lot of stuff happening right now. We see great tools emerging. Voice bots, Brett Kinsella always reports on large funding rounds right now for voice startups. And so there's definitely a lot of stuff happening right now.
This is true. I think one of the points you mentioned, like the cross-functional teams, is something that we are seeing as well. That in the beginning, or when everything started off, it was a really developer-focused community and developer-focused products that arose. Mm-hmm. And now, since there's a more holistic approach and product managers and conversational designers are entering the space, we might get a little more user-centric solutions than solutions that were built by developers looking for users. Yeah. And I think this is something that we've seen as well.
Mm. And there's also something, so at the beginning also everyone focused on the build part of that. Mm. So maybe a bit on design, but not a lot, a lot on building it, very developer driven. And then after that, when it was launched, not really a lot on actually improving the experience. And it feels like that now there's more and more people that actually improve experiences. And this is why popular voice game studios, we have a lot of them, like Labworks, Matchbox, and so on, they all have just a few voice experiences, voice games that they improve on, like they iterate and make them better. And this is why they're so successful. And I think that this is also something where that is changing right now, that we see voice apps or voice experiences is more than just, oh yeah, let's just do this, let's build this, and we need an app, and that's it. rather see it as a product or as a service that needs to be improved over time.
So the holistic approach as well brought business development people to the projects, and they were thinking about not only building, but building for a business model and supporting a business case. And so people think about monetization or marketing spendings or savings by using voice technology. And this is something that will change or is changing the process. And as you said, monetization is one topic that's arising because a more diverse perspective is going into voice technology at the moment, that it should in the end support a business case that has been designed before and is monitored against, and the whole experience is improved against the business case and aligned to the business case. So yeah, I think, but these are the challenges I'd say I agree that are existing today and haven't been there when we all started off with voice technology.
Would you say, Jan, would you say that the first version of Jovo also like was very developer-centric?
So when the first version of Jovo was started, when there was only the smart speakers, no device, no Echo Show or anything with the screen. So it was really just built for exactly this. And the goal was really cross-platform. So we didn't really, like we built a few things that improved the developer experience to make prototyping easier and so on, but it was really very bare bones and very focused on developers. It made it easier than the existing software development kits by Alexa and Google Assistant, for example. You didn't have to do a lot of the plumbing, like analytics integrations, database integrations. You didn't have to build everything yourself. It was kind of for development beginners. I mean, for example, I'm not a developer myself, but I was still able to like write documentation and do tutorials and demo sessions with Jovo for like simple use cases, for example. So I think, it was somewhere in between. I think the newest version of Jovo version 4 that we're launching is probably more complicated, but also just because the whole industry became more complex and complicated. It's a fine line. But there's easier tools now too. And so if someone doesn't want to build first and wants to get a quick prototype, they probably don't use Jovo for a quick prototype. They probably use Voiceflow, Botmock, or another tool. Boxable, new design tool that's coming up too. And so we probably moved a bit with the market and saw what's happening where.
So, but as you say, how do you make sure that Jovo is aligning with these new challenges and these new perspectives and that we are talking about? So how do you keep track, or will you be in the future more or stay more developer focused and other tools will be kind of in the toolbox or in the ballpark and be used for other stuff? Like you mentioned Voiceflow for prototyping. So where do you see your approach and how do you make sure that your product is aligned to the needs of the market at the moment? What is your approach here?
So really a lot of the product ideas that that go into Jovo are they come up either by talking to our community. And so we have weekly office hours every Wednesday where we chat with the community about like we show them something that we're working on, they give feedback and so on, and cool stuff comes up then. And so user feedback and our community Slack channel and so on. But also a lot comes up when we try to scratch our own itch, because we're using our product ourselves. That's also something sometimes called dog fooding. So we eat our own dog food and improve the product. So maybe that's something that I can add here. So Jovo is an open source framework. That means anyone can use it for free. The source code is available online on GitHub, and we have a community of contributors that also improve the code and so on. And this means that any company, any individual developers can just use it, and we don't make money off of that. Usually for open source projects, there's then for the monetization perspective, how they finance themselves, there's different stages, and it usually starts with professional services. And so that the company that supports an open source project or that builds an open source project that uses this tool that they build to do client projects, to maybe act as an agency. We often work together with other agency partners to work on projects. And so we really use our own project or our own product for real life projects. And this helps us a lot in understanding the market and staying up to date, what's happening and so on, what are the challenges. And a lot of the challenges involve not the code, actually, when we do projects like this. There is a lot of going from design to development, for example, content management, testing, QA, and stuff like this. And so there's really just the full life cycle, actually, from design to launch and then improving it. Everywhere there's room for improvement. And so one of the products that we launched, for example, an additional product on top of our developer framework, is called the Jovo Inbox, which is like a review tool. I wouldn't call it an analytics tool, where you can, like, similar to like an email inbox, you can click on a conversation and see the transcript of the conversation and understand what the user said to your bot and how the bot responded. You can even see APL visuals and so on. And so something like this is something where I'd say this would be targeted more at a QA tester, at a product manager, for example. But this is something that we were looking for, something like this, when we were building our own projects. And we thought, okay, now if no one else builds it, we need to build it ourselves and integrate it deeply into the Jovo framework, that you install a plugin into your Jovo app and it automatically stores all conversations in the inbox, and then you can look at the inbox. And we're actively building more tools on top of that to support the full life cycle, where it makes sense, where there are no other tools like Voiceflow and so on, where we can also mm-hmm. integrate.
So we all agree on that the process has changed, like how voice user experiences are built over the last few years. You know, they got, I'd say, pretty complex, and staying up to date in by exchanging with other agencies. I know one of these ourselves, and we are like steadily in conversations and always like exchanging thoughts and opinions on how to improve and how to improve the workflow and how to improve maybe to contribute to your framework. I didn't do it so far, but I know a few of my colleagues did, like Dominic and a few other our developers contributed to your framework. So the process got more complex, and I would also say that Jovo is not only a GitHub project anymore. It's got bigger. It's got like better. It's got like more functionalities. You just mentioned that Jovo touches like the analysis part of voice projects. We know that like the conception part, design part, prototyping part, programming part, testing, launching, analysis and improving is like all this life cycle we go through and iterate through. But would you say which of these process parts, where is Jovo involved?
So at the beginning we were really maybe if there's I mirrored, so I need to like so we start with design, and then maybe there's prototyping, like people like that's debatable, is prototyping more part of design and more part of development, somewhere in between. But at the beginning we were really focused on prototyping and development, and then we had a few analytics integrations and so on to also learn from user interactions after launching the app. So we added a few more things, and so we also moved to from the development to improve the improvement part. So we have the inbox is actually the like what happens after after the launch. This is helpful there. We probably won't move because there are some great players out there already. They have larger teams. They build great products, and so we probably won't go into the design in the pure design aspect for now. We want to focus more on still building and improving voice experiences. Maybe a bit more for prototyping, just to make it easier, or maybe we need to just make it easier to add integrations with popular design tools like VoiceFlow to export a VoiceFlow design and run it in Jovo, for example, and then have a hybrid version where some stuff you can still design in VoiceFlow, and then for other things where you need to do maybe more low-level work, you can use Jovo, for example, and then also use all the Jovo integrations that also make Jovo powerful. What I think also, you mentioned complexity, like apps are getting more complex, tools are getting more complex. So what the voice industry and the broader conversational AI industry is still missing is design best practices. So we still, like, everyone reinvents their own wheel. Like, how do I ask someone for their phone number? How would I reserve a table at a restaurant? How do I ask for feedback and so on? People really, for each of these designs, you draw your flowchart or your sample scripts, and then you build it. And that makes it really, difficult to, like, this is something where, like, we also don't really learn from each other if everyone does it on their own and so on. And so one of the big parts of what we're working on at Jovo is a component-based system where we provide a suite of best practice components that are tested, and where we have something like asking someone for their phone number, where you don't have to reinvent the wheel there. You have a proven concept where this works. And I would assume like something like this would maybe move somewhere into the design direction as well, because you probably don't need to care a lot about the design. So something like a standard where, you know, how do I access information? How do I ask for specific data from the user and stuff like this? And this is also where we think that open source is important, that the community can improve these best practices and can make it easier. That in the end, in a mobile app, you know that it refreshes when you pull down, for example. Stuff like this, I think, needs to happen for better user experiences so that developers can build apps, voice apps, conversational apps easier, and users also know how to use them because there's some best practices and standards happening.
That is really needed. I'd agree. I mean, like the submit button, when the internet started off, the submit button had every possible color, and now everybody knows submit button is a green button and submit is written on it. So that's
yes, and like the login is always at the top right and stuff like this. Yeah.
So as you could see, there was some. Writing on the screen. This is an interactive format, so if you like to post your own question, have anything you'd like to know that Jan can answer and hasn't answered in his 10 secrets yet, and maybe it's one of the 4.5 missing secrets, post the question here, and I'm pretty sure Jan will have an answer for almost everything that you post here. And otherwise, just give him a challenge and we will see.
I will have an answer. Questions that make sense.
There's already one question raised in the chat, but this is something we will for sure touch in a few moments. I would like to pick up one thing you just said, Jan, and that's the the not existing separation, I would say, of design and technical aspects and technical dimensions, and being able to like speak different languages, you know, as a conversational designer or architect or whatever, you have to be able to like understand the technology and how it's used by the people out there, and how to like write and draw user flows and dialogues and all that stuff. So I really like that that component-based approach you just said or just mentioned. And I think that the conversational designers have to be like multi tools, so to speak, you know, because you always have to consider both perspectives when you are like designing new things. You know, is that possible on that certain platform? Are there any other limitations, you know, from maybe connected APIs or all that stuff, you know? And this is I agree, it's really key for successful projects that you have those people involved who can take different perspectives on a certain problem. And that's where like is this intersection of design and technology, and that's why I'm absolutely convinced that Jovo will have more touch points to the design process and anticipate like these challenges voice designers have nowadays, or like in actual projects, you know. But moving a bit forward, everyone who's and that's also like a design and tech question, so to speak, everyone who's involved in voice projects or has ever attended an event or has read like VoiceBot AI or so has heard of the term multimodality. So let's drop that buzzword here too. And without further ado, I would really love your like current view today, you know, on how important it is in general and how you would define it, and how Jovo like treats this like term or challenge, you know, of multimodality.
I can't believe it's like we've been talking for half an hour and I can't believe I haven't mentioned that term yet. Because that was always our, at Jovo, that was always our go-to term, cross-device, multimodal. So that is actually how we got started at Jovo. When we got started, so the framework was actually a bit of a pivot from our original idea, which was allowing cross-device experiences. And so actually our first demo was where you could talk to your Alexa, like your Echo Dot, for example, and you could control your TV, or you could tell your Echo to play something on your TV and stuff like this, or to send push notifications to your mobile phone and stuff like this. And so our first demos were an API that would be the glue between all these different devices. And so this was always our thing. We always called this context first, that it doesn't make sense to just build for voice, that it really makes sense to think about the current context or the situation the user is in right now, and to deliver the right information at the right time on the right device and modality. And but multimodal has really become in the last 2 years, I think, like a standard term. Oh yeah, the next wave of voice apps are going to be multimodal. And multimodal is very often people use that together with, yeah, like voice experiences on a smart speaker. Multimodal is, I have an Echo Show now and I have a few screens on there, and now it's a multimodal experience. And I believe that multimodal is really a lot more, and this is what I do a lot of research about. And this is also something, the first multimodal experience I've written my master's thesis on that topic as well. And so this is really one of my favorite topics. And the first multimodal experience was that was officially published in a research paper was in the 1980 by Richard Bolt, where they had like a huge system where someone was sitting somewhere and would look at a wall with a screen and could there was a map on there, and that person would just say, put that there, and it would understand the gestures and the speech together in parallel. So it would actually like merge these two input modalities, gestures and speech. This is also called multimodal fusion, and understand that, and then move that point on this map there. And so this was in 1980, and so
come a long way here.
40 years ago, but yeah, as always, research is always like first by quite a few years, and so. This was a really large machine. Like, you had different cameras, you had to sit on this chair exactly at the center, and you had this huge map. And so this is not how multimodal systems, like, this was inspired by a Minority Report, where you have like Tom Cruise, I think, like standing in front of it, and like, this is how we always thought, oh, sci-fi is going to happen like this. We at Jovo believe that multimodal experiences are going to look different, that we don't have this gigantic big machine where you that understands all modalities, but rather that we now have so many devices that we interact with. Like, we have AirPods, we have our mobile phones that are with us all the time, we have different smart speakers, we have a TV at home, we have wearables and so on, trackers, that the real multimodal experiences are gluing these devices together and understanding where to display the right information. And this is extremely difficult, understanding all those contextual factors. And so I think we're getting there, but this is for me like the real like context first multimodal and cross device experience that understands where you are. Like, in the future, when we and I think Brett Kinsella said this once, shout out to Brett Kinsella, always listening to his podcasts, that maybe in the future we won't have like smart speakers. It would just like, we have any device that has a microphone, and a lot of devices are going to have microphones. And when I walk into my my apartment, I can just say, like, how, like, I want to, and now I'm bringing the red juice example, I want to order red juice, and then it understands, okay, now he's in the living room right now. Let's turn on the TV, because TV is next to where that person is standing, and then shows red shoes on this TV, for example. And so I think that something like this, and like ambient computing and so on, like, we won't talk about the specific device. A mix of the devices are going to get the job done in the best way. And yeah, this has a lot of privacy implications as well, like sharing data across different devices and platforms and so on. But this is how I think. And I now realize I did not answer the question correctly, because I talked a lot about the vision and not what you mentioned, Tim.
Yeah,
about,
maybe I can add right, like, now. There was a question from the chat that touches somehow the things you just said, but I want definitely to pick it up, and we could maybe tick it off or see if you have like additional thoughts on that. By the way, I got like a 3 in a row for my buzzword bingo I had here, because you said multimodal, context first, and multi-device in one sentence.
Cross device.
That's a big effort to do. Perfect. So the question was, do you consider multimodal as two different devices or more? And do you consider multimodal to be multi-content format too, you know? And you touched something of that, I think, already, but you can like summarize this in one or two sentences.
So to me, multimodal means that there's either multiple input modalities and or multiple output channels. And so multimodal can be, I only speak to an Echo Show, and it also displays me some information while also speaking to it, for example. But an Echo Show, I can also touch a button, for example. So this is really a multimodal experience. Does not mean that it has to be has to work across devices. And these multiple output channels can be on one device. They can be across. They can work across devices as well. And there's also lots of other, like what I just mentioned with like talking to an Echo Show. This is an experience that's happening just right at this moment. There's also continuous experiences. So for example, I listen to a podcast at home, and then I want to continue listening to it. So I tell Alexa to send me a push notification with where I left off at this podcast episode to my phone, for example. And so this for me would also be a multimodal experience, but I'm not sure if that's if there's any multimodality purists would disagree.
What do you think, like adding something to your shopping list via voice that will be displayed in your app when you're in a supermarket? Like in my kitchen, I will add something to the shopping list via voice, and in the supermarket, I see this list maybe a day later displayed on my smartphone. Is this multimodal or?
That's a continuous experience, and that's multimodal. And if we're super correct, even a smart speaker like an Echo Dot, for example, is multimodal because it has this light ring that gives you, like, it tells you that it's listening. Actually, so yeah. It's really a multimodal experience. And so, it's difficult. And this is why I don't like that everyone just uses the term multimodal without talking about specifics, because it's like, yeah, it's a stylish term, but it doesn't really say anything because it's super vague.
Yeah, you just gave some more background on that, like with like revealing the history of multimodal experiences. But there's like one follow up question from Heidi from the chat or in the chat, and that's a perfect transition. Thank you for Heidi for this one.
Hi,
how does multimodal differ from context, and how do these both like perspectives or like implications come together, belong together? And I really like nowadays, or like with our clients in the recent projects, like for over like the last year or one and a half, is discussing or going more into detail about the actual context of the users. And with all these like technical and platform implications, what kind of device is the user using currently, where is he or she, and all that information. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, that's the name of your blog, you know, context first. How do you bring it together with multimodal?
In my most recent article, that introduction to dialogue management, I also spent some time thinking about what is context, what is state, and so on. And so context for me is, so there's when I say something, I want to order red shoes, that's explicit information. Like the natural language understanding service understands, maybe that's like the order something intent, and understands red and shoes as two entities, for example. And so that's like structured meaning derived from some raw input that I give the system. And that's explicit information. For me, context is anything that is implicit information. Like context could be, which device am I using? So nothing that I'm explicitly saying, but rather like how I'm saying something, where I do that, what I use, where I am. Like, am I outside? Am I using a mobile phone? So maybe I'm using this on the go. Am I using the TV remote and talk to that, for example. Even like sentiment analysis, emotion detection could be a part of that too. Like, am I saying this angrily? I need some red juice because I don't know, my others got got stolen or I don't know. And so stuff like this and anything that could help us understand the user's current situation, I would consider as context. And then we use this context and the explicit information, the structured input of what I was saying, and we use that to then do dialogue management and then give the right response back to the user. And this would then involve, depending on context, where we display that information. Like, do we is it on an Echo Show? So we display some more information there visually using APL, for example. Or is it on a mobile phone and then we do something else? So we use context to then give a multimodal response.
So everybody working in a field of voice and has, I think, gotten some headaches about this everything related to multimodal, because I think this is kind of the holy grail of voice applications, that you get the context and design and build properly for the context the user is in and understand the context of the user. So, and just one more layer of complexity that's arising, and that you mentioned the different devices the user uses and that are defining his context. Another promise of Jovo is not only that it's supporting multimodality, and one of the first promises you made us when we first developed with Jovo is that we can deploy on multi-platforms. And we have seen in the beginning, we might have only designed and worked with Amazon Alexa and Google Assistant, but since then, so many other platforms arose, and as of today, I think we have a way more like fractured ecosystem of different voice assistants and technologies that are used out there. We are talking about IVRs with the pandemic. People talked about contactless interactions via voice. So your promise is multi-platform strategy or support of multi-platform strategies with Jovo. How do you define this multi-platform for yourself? So multi-platform, multi-device, and so, and what is your strategy approaching this, and how's Jovo supporting this strategy?
So we got started as with Alexa and Google Assistant, and with version 3 of Jovo that we launched last year in March 2020, we expanded to more platforms and also web, for example, mobile. And so we made we opened up our pipeline to build to hook into different natural language understanding integrations, into speech recognition integrations, and so on, that you can really build your own pipeline and connect any device and any platform that you want. Also, like Samsung Bixby also works. We have Twilio if you want to build an IVR, a phone bot. So we see, and this is also a even bigger factor of what we're building right now with Jovo version 4, is that we see Jovo as you can build the conversational core and then can connect any platform. And of course, there are platform-specific features. So there's different ways how you can ask for a user's location on Alexa and on Google Assistant. And if you're building a voice-enabled mobile app, then there's another way, and so on. And so there's different ways, and this is where it gets difficult. But this is also where we want to help with our components that we offer. That a component asking for a phone number, we already have a component like this, where it supports that a user can just dictate their phone number, but it also supports if a developer wants to enable it, it also supports that you use the Alexa profile feature, I think it's called like this, to directly ask for the phone number and stuff like this. And so we're trying to abstract stuff like this away. And that's also one of the features in Jovo version 4 is that the dialogue management and the output that is managed, they're now separated. And that makes it a little easier to, like you build your conversational flow and so on, and then deliver the right output depending on where you are in the conversation right now. And there we are working with, we call this a multimodal template engine. That's probably also something for your bingo card, where you have some structured output and then it generates the right output for you depending on the platform. And so, for example, on Google Assistant, you can have a carousel or like a cart. You can display like something where you can swipe and see different carts and items on Google Assistant on the phone, for example. And we now built a feature where this cart or this carousel output gets automatically translated into APL output, that without touching APL at all, you can have the same carousels that you have on your mobile phone and Google Assistant. You can have that on an Alexa device with the screen as well, for example, just to get started. And then if you want to customize it, of course you can. And lots of these things. And then also if you want to touch one of these items, all of this is already taken care of. And so this is how we want to make it easier to build experiences like this that still work across platforms. But then, of course, sometimes it doesn't make sense to build a game on Alexa that's heavily built for devices with a screen compared to an SMS bot or a customer service phone bot. But that's also not what our goal is, that you have to build everything in one code base. It's rather we build all the tools that you can, like Jovo should be helpful, even if you're only building for Alexa, for example. It should still be helpful and help you a lot. The cross-platform features, they're an added benefit.
So,
question from the chat.
Okay.
Maybe that's because it's perfectly fitting. One of the first questions I moved to this exact point is if it's possible to integrate Jovo in native mobile apps on iOS and Android, how it's done, if it's possible.
So Ruben, one of our team members, is currently working on a demo, which already works. We want to open source that soon, where we have a Flutter mobile app. So Flutter is a cross-platform mobile app framework that works on iOS and Android. And so we already have a solution where you can build a Flutter app and send, like, record the speech there and then send the speech to your Jovo app, and the Jovo app does everything that it does and then sends the output back to the Flutter app, and the Flutter app then renders that. And so we are actively working on examples for this as well. Yeah, so it already works. There's just not any examples out there. And so people who currently want to build something like this, they have to build a lot of the plumbing themselves, the integrations and so on. And it already works. And we see people that built customized web integrations, mobile integrations and so on top of Jovo.
Okay. So I could from your talk I could see the big billboard out there, like, build once, deploy everywhere. This is a big promise that you're making here, and I think everybody's eager just to get an idea in this context of this promise, what is the effort if you build once and then trying to add another platform on top, like if you have built something for Alexa and then you like to move it on to or deploy it to external Google as well. What is your idea about the effort?
So that's it depends on what platform you're building for. So for example, if you build for Google Assistant and already have your Dialogflow agent built, and then which does the natural language understanding, and then bringing that to the web, for example, without customizing the front end or the design, bringing that to the web isn't super difficult because you could still use the same Dialogflow agent for your natural language understanding. What usually takes a lot of time when people bring an Alexa skill to a Google action is that Alexa and Google Actions, they have their own natural language understanding engines, and depending on the complexity of the voice app, it usually takes some time to to migrate from the Alexa NLU to the Google Assistant NLU, for example, if you use built-in types like Amazon.city or Amazon.firstname or something like this, then you have to find built-in types for the other platform as well. And maybe sometimes they don't offer that, and then it gets difficult. So we have the Jovo model, which is like an abstracted language model that you can translate into the different platforms. And so this helps with that. And we're also we also want to work on our own built-in types that make it easier to move from one platform to the other. And so there's lots of ideas, but we haven't been able to focus on the language model part yet. So this is the one part. And then the other part is also, it really depends on the complexity of the voice app. And so if it's something that doesn't use platform-specific features at all, then it's not a big problem. But if you're asking for a phone number, what I mentioned, and you're using the Alexa profile feature, or if you're asking for a specific location, then there's a few things that are different. And then one platform doesn't support a feature at all that you built for Alexa. It doesn't support, Google Action doesn't support that at all. Then maybe you have to build a different flow at all for this specific step. And then there it could get a little difficult.
Difficult.
I think it's still, so we're not promising one click and it works across any platform. We still say, okay, it works across platforms and depending on your app, but it still saves a lot of time because you don't have to rebuild everything in different, and that's also something, you don't have to rebuild everything in different ecosystems. You don't have to learn the Alexa SDK and then the Google Actions SDK, and then you post the one on AWS and the other on Google Cloud. You have your code base, you have your design-specific language, and so on.
Tim is still laughing. I think the little problems that are ones that usually cost us 5 days.
Problems. And Dana nailed it in the chat. Build once, tweak everywhere.
great one.
And there's a question, and that's from Emil from the chat in the Q&A tool. Thanks for that, and that's like touching some of these tweaks and some of these challenges, like voice designers or conversational designers have, is dealing with grammar, for instance, you know, in specific languages, and helping, you just said there are maybe built-in types and all that stuff, maybe that help improving and making the work on projects and voice user experience more efficient. There's one example, you know, in German, the declination of words, you know, dealing with different words and different, like the amount of things, like the singular or the plural of something. Are there tools that help designers to deal with this, or help then the intersection of design and like development to deal with these challenges?
Is this more related on input or output, like understanding different ways how people talk to you in different languages, or presenting like the
I think
the
it's,
right
it's,
output?
I would say both parts are interesting, you know, dealing with the input from a user and how to manage that every, like, or the, your assistants you or platforms you want to publish on get it right to speak the right, like in a recipe, the right like amount of tablespoons or so you have to put in into your meal, you know.
Yeah, I think that's also something, like localization or internationalization is more than just translating something. It's like a cultural aspect. So Dominic, thank you. Oh no, really?
And monetization is still missing, so we have to put in monetization somewhere.
I said monetization really early.
Okay. Sorry, I missed that. So another three in a row.
Is this something to be proud of? I'm not sure. Dominic, you mentioned I think last week that you're building a product right now that has lots, like 18 different locales, which is something like this. Like you probably are way better at answering that that question. Like what problems came up there with different locales and so on.
Yeah, okay. So what is this interview now about with me?
Yes.
So meet the expert.
What is more challenging, the input or the output? I think both of them equally challenging, I'd say, in terms of grammar. Maybe input is not, you can be more fuzzy about input because the NLU usually takes a lot of pain from your shoulders because it's doing the stuff in the background and you don't have to worry about wrong grammars. Output, on the other hand, is, I think, way more sensible because like this, the small, like grammar problems, breaks in the outputs, like having appropriate breaks in the breaks between sentences, the speed of the output of the speech that is said to the user. This is something that really annoys you in the user experience. If something is wrong there, your ear is 100% sensible. This is like if a room is painted in the wrong color, it's a screaming yellow, you won't feel comfortable there. If the output is off by a little all the time, this is not a good experience that you have with your voice assistant. I think that's why it's not the general one or the general approach here that is getting everything wrong, but the small ones having a good, not written language, spoken language in your design. That's something that really you should put effort in here and creating headaches. And especially when it comes to localization, because this is not translating something. This is something really localizing to the context of the user in different locales. And US English is different than UK English. And someone in Spain will speak another English maybe. So this is something that you need to adapt when you're building, designing, and thinking about localization.
Yeah. And when you get it right, the whole stuff, that's what I would say differentiates like good voice user experience from top-notch voice user experiences. And taking all that into account of like the context, bring out your buzzword sheets when you put it into consideration context, multimodality, cross device, cross platform, internationalization, monetization, and all that amazing stuff. That's from my perspective, personal perspective. That's the intelligence of and smartness of voice user experiences that is, I would say, missing in a lot of things, a lot of products that are out there at the moment. You know, that like going the extra mile, going the last 7%, you know, to fix all that stuff that is a lot of work, but it has to be done because, like in a conversation, you know, when you get always the same word like wrong, you know, or a couple of different words, it's from time to time it will annoy the users, and that's great that you are building like a tool set or a bunch of a pile of tools and helpful features to overcome these challenges or make them a bit easier to manage.
There's still so much work to do, but it's always fun. It's a fun challenge.
But I think like in this perspective, you see that we are really in the early days. It's not only the tools can't do a lot of the stuff or handling stuff for you, and you have to put your own brain in it. It's also the technology that is not there yet. We don't, like with the major voice assistant at the moment, we don't have built-in sentiment analysis that people know that the user's angry and about his stolen red shoes, for instance. So, and there might not be input multimodality that the camera is taken something into account as well, like if I'm in a good mood or bad mood by just my analysis of my face, my face interactions. So this is really why I think we are in a really early stage, and people or sometimes miss this, that this is a really new technology. I mean, it has been around a long time before, like you said, 40 years ago, but like the technology application for consumer devices at the moment is really, it's day one. It's not a major technology that has been out there and improved over the years.
So another
you got the password day one.
It's always day one. Yeah. Perfect. So Jovo V4, when? That's the most stressing question. When?
So we've been working on version 4 for some context. So we launched version 3 last March, and version 3 was actually just about extending the platform integrations, adding an integration for the web, for Bixby, and so on. And what we're now doing is, from what we learned over the last 4 years of building Jovo, we now translate everything into basically a new framework, version 4. So we've rewritten every line of code, and so this was really crazy amount of design and development work where we really try to nail it. And so 9 months ago, we didn't know how this is going to look like at all. We just knew not how it looks like right now. And as I mentioned, because like the start of Jovo, like the version 0.1 was built when there were not even devices with a screen out there yet. And so we dragged all of these old problems with us until version 3.4, and now we're like getting rid of all of them and rebuilding everything. And this takes a lot of time, as we learned. But we have an alpha version that our community already uses. We've been having this out there for, I think, two months. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to launch a beta version for the broader community. And so we're currently writing documentation and so on. And we want to publicly launch it in September or October after the summer break.
Write down September, October, Tim. He said,
"Yes, yeah." I said in February.
Which year?
Which year?
But yeah, it's actually now that I'm writing the documentation, it's really I can't even grasp what people are going to build with this, because it's really powerful. So what I mentioned with these components, like components are now the core. Like each Jovo app consists of just components. So we learned a lot from web frameworks like React and Vue.js, for example. And the goal was really to make Jovo, complex Jovo apps, easier to build, more extensible, that you can use different components, make them accessible to the community, and so on. Build output that works across platforms, and stuff like this. And so really the goal is a more powerful framework with a lot of focus on multimodal, where like stuff like what I mentioned with, like if you click a button on a screen device, that on APL, for example, on an Echo Show, that you don't have to rebuild something weird to make that button click work. It just works as if someone said something to the app, like stuff like this. We believe that it's not just like some incremental improvement, but it's really a huge step for us, like how helpful and powerful Jovo version 4 is. And yeah, let's see what the rest thinks. I hope it's not getting too complicated, but it's really, for us, it's the foundation to then build cool new tools on top of that as well.
So, I can just only encourage everybody to get their own hands dirty, install version 4, play around as we did with it. And I mean, this is an open source framework. It's living from contributions and brain contributions from the community. Get your ideas in there. Like, let Jan and his team know what you are working on, what your challenges are. what you think you need, and eventually, if you're lucky, his team will implement the feature for you, or as an open source framework, just adapt it yourself, connect one platform that you're building on, you're interested in, and then the whole ecosystem will grow by just contributing and exchanging the knowledge. This is open source, so just to mention this once again here.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, guys. Yeah, I would say. Last famous words, please. Go
ahead. If you want to be a part of the Jovo community, you can join the Jovo Slack channel that you can find on our website, jovo.tech/slack. And then also our office hours are happening every Wednesday, 5 p.m. CET, 11 a.m. Eastern time. So that's also where a lot of the feature ideas that we build, we discuss them there first. We always get really, really great feedback from the community. And so if you want to be part of that and want to help us shape the future of voice app development, let us know and join us and chat with us.
Great. So that would have been my question, but great that you anticipated this one already. Perfect. So it's time to bring this live interview to an end, to conclude. And first of all, thank you so much, Jan, for taking the time. It's been really great discussing with you all that interesting stuff about Jovo, but also on voice tech and which role technology in general plays in complex voice projects. And thanks to the audience for these questions, super interesting, and many questions. So thank you for this, that helped us a lot. And hopefully all your questions got answered. In case they haven't been answered, please join us right now after the broadcast here on the main stage in our breakout session. So once we finish the broadcast right here, head over on the left-hand sidebar. There is the button called Sessions, and there you will find the voice bar. And join us there for a casual hangout right now in a few minutes, to answer, to bring up some more questions. Jan will join us there, and so that's your possibility to get in touch with a very famous voice enthusiast. And Jan. No. Thanks, Jan.
Thank you.
And everyone out there, thank you so much for joining us today on Hopin via our Alexa skill. Stay healthy. Enjoy the summer, and we will be back soon with more events. Stay tuned. Sign up for our newsletter on allaboutvoice.club, and there you will get the invitations for all our upcoming events, and join the Jovo developer community.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody. Stay tuned. We will do a short summer break, and then we'll be back with All About Voice Club in this fall earliest, with new topics, new speakers, new experts that will talk about voice technology and voice, the whole voice ecosystem and different voice aspects. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you so much. And great. See you in a minute in
the breakout.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.